and our guest Stan Dale as we talk about a changing planet and the search for the Garden of Eden. And your calls next on Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back to Coast, Stan Dale with us. Stan, so the search for the Garden of Eden and the fact that it's been hidden for so long, you think governments are doing that and they did it on purpose? What would their purpose be?
Well, let me back up just a minute. I'll get to that. I was just trying to finish answering your question before we went to the break about when did we lose it. And I think we lost it around 1000 B.C., maybe around 950 B.C., when King Solomon was the last one to actually play with the data. There's a growing weight of evidence that the book of Genesis, the first part of it talking about the Garden of Eden, was transcribed or translated by Moses from clay tablets that he got from Sumerian digs that were transferred over to the Egyptian library there in Alexandria. Now, the point is, he hid the Garden of Eden because he wanted the wealth there. Nowadays, because we know it was, you know, the Ophir, where the really good gold was, it was fine dust and pebble gold that was in streams coming out of mountains in Antigola Bay there in northeast Madagascar. Now, he had maps that showed that. He had maps, access to maps that showed the Earth closer together. I don't know where they went, but he had to have had them to name, Ophir, like the wedge, which drives things apart when it gets wet. You know, wooden wedges used to do that when they were breaking stones. So now he kept it secret. He was a government. And now then, if any government does know about it, they're keeping it relatively secret. And I say relatively because the Chinese government and the French government and the several other governments at the moment are filing claims all over Madagascar Island for gold and other things that are there. Maybe they're not telling the public about it because of a huge amount of gold there. I don't know, but there's gold there. There's gold across the from Madagascar in Tanzania near Mount Kilimanjaro. There's Kilimanjaro Gold Corporation is there. And today, when I discovered this and delivered it in the lecture, I put out a press release to every major media, TV, newspaper, History Channel, National Geographic, everybody with details of this. No one even said we got it. They just did not care, or were either told to shut up. Can you believe that?
That's weird. I know. We knew about this. We've been working on getting you on, Stan, of course.
Yeah, I know.
But you're right. They didn't touch it.
So with the press being as controlled as it is, in fact, you wouldn't think that Fox would be controlled, but they didn't even say. I wrote to, you know, to several of the news reporters there that would be interested in that kind of stuff, didn't even get a not interested, just did, heard nothing. And that just amazes me from Fox. I mean, you know who did pick this up was a travel company in Florida, the travel.com, and they're going to fund the filming of the documentary in the Garden of Eden.
So anyways, let's get back to what the Garden of Eden may have looked like. Then we'll take calls with you in just a moment.
All right.
It was lush in those days, but what about the Adam and the Eve? That's what fascinates me the most, the fact that these reportedly were the first human beings ever. Were they, or was that just a description of what might have been a whole clan of people?
Adam and Eve, I think, well, Adam, to start with, was a created being, a human, you know, a red earth man, as opposed to the other hominids that were around, in my opinion, okay? And I think that he was a new breed of intelligent being on the earth, created there for the purpose. And, of course, Eve was made genetically from the DNA from his rib. But I do believe that happened. And I'll tell you, some of the weight of the evidence is from the archaeological community who say that the mitochondrial Eve, you know, we've heard of that, where everyone came from, that one woman that was located in East Africa somewhere. She was located in the Omo Valley. And then the Leakeys found older hominids in the Old Dubai Gorge, which is 5 miles outside the Garden of Eden. All that points back to that same area from established, accepted archaeology. The only difference is they say that occurred like millions of years ago versus me saying, well, that was in the last 6,000 years sometime. That's the only difference. The location is the same, and the spread of the DNA is the same if everything was all cooked together. these are things I've put in a map that's I think you can see it there on the show images page. I'm not sure.
And you think the quest for gold and to hide it might be the big reason?
I think it's more than that, because to understand where this gold is today meant that you had to look at the Earth as having had a catastrophic expansion in the last 6,000 years sometime. And that's kind of frightening when the established science has been saying, well, everything is gradual. It'll take hundreds of millions of years for this and that. And then some guy comes along at me and says, look, if you put all the evidence together, we agree, except for one thing. It happens catastrophically within the last 6,000-year period, these things. That then starts to scare people when you look at how often does Yellowstone erupt, really? You see what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah. As a matter of fact, I was talking about Yellowstone earlier and what a disaster that could be.
Oh, yeah. I mean, there's just things like this happening. The volcanoes over in Iceland, the earthquakes that are happening in the Azores, the earthquakes around Spain at Rock of Gibraltar there, earthquakes in the western Pacific. I mean, there are just things starting to happen. The geysers are starting to be more prevalent. They've got a whole website, one of the government agencies, showing all the geysers, the hot erupting geysers of water at the seabed all over the Earth. And there are zillions of them, and they're tracking them all. These things are like hot hypodermic needles shooting hot water up from inside the Earth somewhere. So,
if we had Adam and Eve's DNA,
yeah,
would we be able to pinpoint exactly our direct lineage with them?
Well, that's interesting. I suppose we could. We'd have to trace it back. We'd only have to find Noah. Now, they think they've got the Noah's Ark up on Ararat, and if they could find DNA preserved somehow there, which was DNA from, like, Noah, or his three sons. If we could get that, they were reputedly direct descendants of Adam and Eve. They were unpolluted in the gene pool. If we could do that, then we would know. And this mitochondrial Eve business traces all of us back to that area of Northeast Africa right next to the Garden of Eden. So the answer is yes, I think so.
All right, let's go to some calls here. Anne is in Toronto, Canada, east of the Rockies. Welcome to Coast to Coast. Anne, go ahead.
Yeah, I have a proposal. It's about the Yellowstone volcano. I was wondering, is it all possible that maybe we could go around Yellowstone and bulldoze it and turn it actually into a swimming pool so the ash wouldn't hurt anybody?
And too big. This is a massive caldera. Stan, you're better to answer this than me, but there's no way we can make any earth changes around there.
No, I'm afraid that we would just add weight that would be shot up into the air and more dust and stuff. It's a novel idea, but practically speaking, we just don't have the technology to do that.
No. And you know what? When that thing goes, heaven help us.
You bet.
Unbelievable. So when let's get back to the earth changes a little, because it ties into the Garden of Eden somewhat. The Earth is tilting right now at about, what, 23, 24 degrees?
23.4 degrees.
Well, I'm pretty close.
Yep.
What caused that tilt?
I think it was the Chicxulub meteor impact. The Chicxulub meteor is only about 6 miles in diameter, and it impacted in the Gulf of Mexico there. But that impact did, I think, break up the Pangaea landmass over a period of 50 to 100 years, somewhere in that length of time. During the lifetime of a guy the Bible named Peleg, which meant that he was born, or it was during his time that the earth split. And even Velikovsky does address this indirectly about what caused the earth to split at that time. I think it was the Chicxulub meteor that did start everything, including the expansion. I think it hurried that along by slowing the core of the Earth down a bit when it impacted it. You just got to see these things. When I get the DVD ready and the CD-ROM, you'll see animations of this stuff and how it bulged out the Indian Ocean and split everything apart. I mean, it was catastrophic. And that meteor, if that occurred like in, 2345 BC, it made a 110-mile diameter crater when it impacted. The energy in that thing, the energy in the Chicxulub meteor was 2 million times greater than the 50-megaton bomb called Tsar Bomba, the biggest bomb we ever blew. And it's like four times as great as the Lagarita Caldera in Colorado here, just in the San Juan Mountains south of us here. It's a huge caldera there, the biggest one that we've ever seen a record of archaeologically and geologically on the planet, and it's four times stronger than that. It's 400 times the energy of that.
That's huge. Hey, Stan, let me get this quick story in, too. As you know, I'm undertaking a campaign to get our power grid insulated against an EMP attack or a solar flare, and this just in.
Yep.
An X-class solar flare, the most dangerous kind, has erupted from the sun today and is heading toward Earth. Still unclear whether to what extent the flare will affect power grids, satellites, or radio transmissions. But either way, tomorrow or the next day, we'll be able to see the flare in action. And, you know, this is something I've been warning about for some time. Here we go. This, you know, it's an X something. They haven't been able to tell us an X what yet. But, Stan, this could be a disaster.
It could be. It really depends upon how direct it is, whether it's a perfect halo hit on the planet. And
how big it is.
Yeah, how big. We know this is probably going to happen sometime, and there's certainly a correlation between solar coronal mass ejections hitting the Earth and earthquakes and volcanoes increasing. So right now is not a good time to be getting these for a lot of reasons. I think they'll get stronger. If my hypothesis is correct, we're going to see sudden increase in violent coronal mass ejections and flares from the sun at the apex of this particular solar cycle. Even though we've had low sunspot numbers, lower than what NASA thought, I think that we could be surprised by activity from the sun throwing off debris in our direction.
I think so. Let's go to Aaron, first-time caller in Louisiana. Aaron, welcome to the program. Go ahead.
Hello. Thank you very much, first of all, for taking my call. And by casualty, I just first song that I hear you guys talking about it. Not to throw you guys off, but I'm actually a time traveler, as you would call it. And I wanted to talk about the respect of talking about the Garden of Eve and your Adam and Eve.
Sure. And what time period, Aaron, are you from?
It's 700 years in the future.
700 into the future.
Just to give you an exact date, it's 2734 when I'm coming from.
Okay. And what brings you back here?
The only reason why I can tell you is I know for a fact that I won't get in trouble, because most people would just, you know, blow it off. But here's the beautiful thing that I'm going to tell you guys. The Garden of Eve is Earth. Adam and Eve were the first people to know of the existence of an actual creator. Now, the creator, most people here would call it God, and I realize there's a lot of religions. Mm-hmm. We've always studied of a different type of people believing in different religions. I've never actually experienced until I actually got here on how big faith is and how powerful faith is. But they're actually the first beings to know of a creator. The beautiful thing is that by my time, there's peace. And I'm trying to explain in a way that maybe you can understand. There's peace. There's not necessarily no more suffering, anything like that. And that actual Garden of Eden, the Garden of Eden, it actually exists in my time. There's not necessarily no more wars, and everyone works and helps out for each other, for the better of the species, if one said. Unfortunately, something did happen to get to that point, and I won't get to that, which is, it happened a lot of suffering, but what comes out of it, the beautiful thing about us is that we are made to love each other. And when we get to that point, it's amazing. I've never heard of your radio station or anything like that, but I find it so amazing of what you guys talk. Unfortunately, it's at night. I wish it was during the daytime when I'm listening to the radio.
How long are you going to hang around in this time zone?
I'm actually, it's weird because I know a lot of people here do something called vacationing. It's almost similar. We come to time periods, and not to offend anyone, but if we come to time periods, vacation in a time period where we actually can't affect anything that will happen, it's in a way, maybe you can understand it, maybe like a boring time during the period where we can actually visit, see what it was like, see what human struggles were like, on even though they were unnecessary struggles, or what we actually arguing or fighting about. But it's almost like a walkabout, where they send you to actually explore and experience what brought us to where I'm at, to where you guys are at. Just to experience.
Well, I tell you what, Aaron, a future time, I'd love to talk to you. Stan, that's pretty interesting, getting a call from somebody from 2734, huh?
Yeah, I guess you could say that.
You never know. But,
you never know, no.
Keep in touch with us, Aaron. Would love to talk with you more about what things are like at 2734. Can the planet tilt even more than this 23.4 degrees?
Oh, I suppose it could. Other planets have, in the outer limits of the solar system here. It it depends on a lot of things, I guess, if we get another big impact or something like that. Let's hope it doesn't, but one planet, I think, has a tilt of, like 70 degrees or so. It's almost sideways out there. I don't know whether it's Uranus or Pluto, the moon. I'm not sure. But anyway, some of the outer planets do have extreme tilts. I think I'd be more concerned about the turbulence in the core of the planet at the moment, which NASA has shown in those new magnetometer scans of the planet, where we've got two north poles and two south poles working inside the planet at the moment, you know, between the northern and southern hemisphere. They're flipping, just like the sun does. And the turbulence is not smooth, not spherical. It's like an egg shape rotating down in our core as these poles flip-flop. And I think we're going to see this magnetic pole flip-flop, perhaps attended by even some change in the spin axis of the planet. So it could be more or less than it is now.
It could be. Let's go to Derek in St. Louis. Derek, let's get you in here real fast. Go ahead.
Great show tonight. You got my interest, that's for sure.
Great.
Stan, I was curious, do you have any research on the Grand Canyon and how fast it was formed? I've actually heard that there was a large lake reservoir that had split, and the Grand Canyon was actually formed a lot faster than what people believe.
Derek, I've studied the work, the PhD dissertation of Dr. Stephen Austin, and he did studies on Mount St. Helens showing that it formed a miniature Grand Canyon in 2 years with multiple ash deposits and with the water seeping down through the ash layers and forming streams underneath that caused it to collapse on itself and make sharp walls like you see in the Grand Canyon. Now, whether there was a large volcano, there was actually in southern Colorado, the La Garita I was talking about, that erupted and threw a huge set of ash layers over what became the Grand Canyon, and then the water settled down and eroded from underneath. Whether that occurred that way or not, or formed that river or that lake that collapsed, I can't be certain at this point, but I don't think that it was a long-term event. I think we're talking a catastrophic event that could have taken place in less than 100 years.
All right, Stan, we're going to come back and take some more calls with you on Coast to Coast AM. Great work. We'll be back. Welcome back to Coast, Stan Dale with us. Stan, are you in shock that you were able to find this?
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, Holly was just punched me on the shoulder, and she said, tell him about all the animals there. I had forgotten to mention that, but there are 25,000 large mammals that live there in the Garden of Eden today in Ngorongoro. Lions, elephants, wildebeest, lots of gazelles, water buffaloes, giraffes, zebra, you know, rhinoceros, leopard, hyena, just all kinds of baboons, monkeys, everything living in that area, plus a lot of species of birds, about 500 of them. And trees, they've got peacock flower trees, yellow wood, bamboo, sweet olives, all kinds of stuff there. It's really kind of, well, the travel agents call this Africa's last Garden of Eden, and I said to myself, last? It's the Garden of Eden, you dummy. Well, you know, wait till people find out about it. And do you know that over a million people a year go visit Ngorongoro because it's part of a UNESCO conservancy called the Ngorongoro Conservancy, you know, connected to the Serengeti Plain where they've got the animals. It's protecting the animals and the, you know, the living life forms there. And so they've got the real Garden of Eden. They just don't realize it. But when they do, they're going to have to be holding people off with a stick, you know, because everyone's going to want to go.
Is there any special powers if you go there?
I don't know. I've been asked, you know, do you think the Tree of Life is still there? And, you know, I don't know whether it's like a tree or whether the word would be more like the erupting spring, like tree limbs, and it's a fountain there somewhere in the garden, or whether it's gone entirely. The reason that the Bible says that God took man out of there was that they were afraid that man would eat of the tree of life and live like they are and be as one of them, you know, from the heavens. So there may be something special there. I did find some mention of a tree that had medicinal properties that healed bodies or something there in one of the tribal legends, but I haven't been able to track that down yet. There's a lot to explore now that we know that it's a place to look. Wonderful place. Anyway, I mean, Hollywood thought it was great. They filmed part of Out of Africa there with Meryl Streep and Robert Redford, and also Hatari was shot there.
Great movie. I remember that.
Kings and queens have visited it. Prince Charles and his sons visited it. The vice president of China visited it in June of this year. You know, it's kind of the done thing for the jet set, I guess. And there's a hotel built on the rim of it there that, you know, for the rich and famous at $1,500 a person per night. You have to be rich and famous, but, you know, it's there. And they've been looking and visiting a place that they just didn't realize the value of it. It's just amazing.
Let's go to Tony in Kansas City. You're on with Stan Dale. Tony, go ahead.
Oh, hi, George. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure thing.
Great show tonight and a most interesting guest there, Stan.
Thank you.
And I had a question if he might be able to elaborate on when he felt the pyramids were built in conjunction with the timeline of the Garden of Eden and Nimrod and the Noah's Ark. And two, I was wondering if you might have any understanding of why there is pyramids in different type of forms all over the world. And that's the only two questions I had. I'll take my answer off the air. Thank you.
Okay.
Boy, that was an excellent question. Yeah, look, when the Earth was all together, before, you know, it split up, and that was a couple hundred years after the flood, somewhere in that time, before that time, the descendants of Ham spread out through North Africa, through what is now a belt between Europe all the way to Indonesia, and then up into China. Now, one of the sons, or the descendants, sorry, of Noah, was called, in the English, Joktan, J-O-K-T-A-N. And his territory that he went to is actually was part of the Yucatan Peninsula today. And it used to touch on to the western coast of Africa before the split. Well, when I looked at the Hebrew for Joktan, his name in Hebrew is Yakitan. Yucatan Peninsula, pyramids, used to be connected to Africa where the pyramids and the Sphinx probably, you know, long before the flood. And you look into Asian countries at Anderwat, you know, where they've got flat top pyramids, and they've got them in Central America and Northern South America. I think they all came from the knowledge of the guys that built the pyramids in Egypt, because they were on either side of that, to lands connected to it. And when the earth split, well, of course, the people of the Yucatan lost track, except for the technology that they remembered, with the North African Egyptian pyramid builders. It's just, I think this probably occurred, part of it before the flood, and a lot of it after the flood. So that's the best I can answer that question. What was the second question, George?
Well, the second one is still about the Garden of Eden and the things that have been going on there. When you mentioned all these lush animals and the creatures that are there, are they replicating because of the Garden of Eden, or what?
Well, they're replicating because it's kind of a protected area, and the lion population is dwindling. They had a disease tick or something that killed off a lot of them. They've probably only 60 lions left and a few leopards. But it's good, fertile grazing land, and the Maasai live outside the Garden of Eden, just down the hill a bit, and daily they will bring their cattle up in over a pathway that comes up over the rim and down to graze their cattle. But they can't stay there overnight. They have to come back out, because the rules are no one can now live in the garden or in the Ngoro crater. And so everyone has to come out at night and come back, you know, during the day. But if you see the pictures, I mean, during the wet season, flowers blossom all over the place. You got hillsides of flowers and color. And there's forest there on the north and south sides of the crater. Look, I've been all over that place so many times in the virtual Earth. It's just incredible. In fact, I tell you what, if people will go to Google Earth and look up, you know, go zoom in on Ngorongoro, get it right into the crater and get right down close to it and push the little option that says photos in Google Earth, and you will see hundreds of photos that people who have visited the crater have taken, and it shows you where they took the picture, and then you zoom it up and you see the pictures. And I tell you what, that'll take you a day just to look at all the pictures taken inside and around the Garden of Eden by people who didn't know they were in the Garden of Eden. Just amazing. You got to do it. You just got to do it.
Let's go to Jerry in Clinton, Arkansas. Jerry, you're up with Stan Dale. Go ahead.
Hey, how's it going, George?
Good. Thank you.
Hey, I've been I've listened for about 20 years. This is the first time I ever called in. I got through.
Well, good. Thanks for supporting us so long. Really appreciate that.
First, I wanted to make a quick comment on the fake cell phone towers.
Let's leave that for another show. Just stick with Stan. Go ahead.
Okay. What I was curious about is you said you've gone there, and you said the fig tree still grow there, correct?
Well, I've gone there virtually, like electronically. I haven't been able to go over there yet. There's some reasons that are preventing people from getting there safely at the moment, but go on.
Oh, is that right? Okay. Well, do you think, I mean, I know you already discussed the tree of life, and if those fig trees are still growing there, then there's a real possibility that there could be the tree of life, and the other one was the tree of knowledge, right? That's what we already, Eve actually ate.
Yeah, it could be there, but if we follow what the scriptures say, they probably are not. I don't know. There's just a lot of things I'd like to go over there myself and look for, but I don't know the answer to that one.
Are there any other trees that are discussed in Genesis?
No. Other than the fig tree, there. Most of the trees in the valley there, in the crater, are acacia trees. There's one that's called the whistling acacia. It's a black, I think it's called a blackthorn whistler or something like that. And it's when the wind blows through, it whistles and makes tunes through all the little, buds or things that are on it. But other than that, there are trees there. And I think the flood did do some damage there, and I don't know whether the ones that were in the center or in the middle of the Garden of Eden that we're talking about, the tree of knowledge and the tree of life, whether they survived or whether God just ripped them up and that was it. I just find it interesting that they say if we'd eaten of the fruit of that tree, that we'd become as them and live, have eternal life. It's just such an interesting thing that you could eat something and do that.
Stan, there's been reports, of course, that hieroglyphics and Egyptian artifacts have been found in the Grand Canyon.
Yes.
If that's true, how'd that happen?
It depends on when we can date them to, but because the United States touched West Africa in Pangaea, it could be part of the same thing, that part of the migration of people that were descendants of Noah that were in Egypt, or before that, even before the flood, went over into what is the United States now, because it would just been a little skip across a stream or a river or even a landmass connecting over into the Grand Canyon area. If it's something that occurred after the flood, considerably after it, then that is rather interesting, because that would be a long journey. Prior to the flood, prior to Pangaea breakup, it wouldn't have been as big of a journey. Here's something that bothered me, George. All these things work together, all of the rivers and the location, the Garden of Eden and the Pangaea and everything fits together, Yucatan, Yucatan Peninsula. But those guys, even when Pangaea was together, would have had to have traveled thousands of miles, and yet they talk about it in the Book of Jubilees and in the Genesis account. They talk about it as, Garden of Eden over there on the east side, where that big mountain is over there? And that big mountain is like 2,000 miles away. And you got to say to yourself, how did they treat these distances so lightly? I mean, did they ride a flying dinosaur or what? I mean, walking it or riding a camel is going to take a long time, but it's like everybody knew where things were. Big things and a long way apart. Doesn't that kind of sound weird?
It's always weird. I have to ask you about this. In the Garden of Eden, of course, they talked about the serpent. They talked about Satan. Is that still possible? Did that happen?
I believe it did, yeah. And I believe his DNA was different to what Adam's was. And I think that he did have, like, reptilian genes in him, so that his skin, they speak about him as a creature of light, you know, a beautiful thing, a very wonderful thing, and in light. And it's like the full rainbow that you would get off of an oil slick, which breaks the light apart, makes a rainbow color on the oil slick. I think his skin was probably like that, and when light shone on him, that he just glistened in color like he was made of holograms all over. I mean, just really beautiful. So, yeah, I think that did happen, and I think that's why we're seeing references to reptilian DNA in the UFO abductions today. I think he's back. I think he's bringing his troops with him, and I think we're going to see his presence, at least the effect of his presence, on a global government that will form here in the near future.
What's he want, Stan?
Say again?
What does he want?
Well, number one, he wants to dissuade as many of us as possible not to, to side with Jesus in this coming war between him and Jesus. The original title deed to the entire earth was given to Adam, according to the Bible. But when Adam sinned, he was taken out of the Garden of Eden, the title deed went over to Lucifer, to Satan, who got him to sin. So the only way we could get the title deed back was when Jesus incarnated and was crucified and then rose again. He's coming back to claim his territory and have a big war with Satan. So Satan's objective at the moment is to deny as many people as he can from siding with Jesus, and to destroy, you know, the people of Earth that are here now that are believers or not. He wants to destroy everybody. He's got his own minions that he'd like to have this. He knows he's doomed. So what he's doing is his best to fool people into following him as the real Jesus. And this will be done with technology, flying saucers, a great deception. It's like the movie V. Do you remember the movie V?
Yeah, sure do.
Okay, we come in harm. We come in peace. We mean you no harm. And the leader, John, comes out, and we find out later that he's got human skin over the outside of his reptilian body, and he really eats mice for dinner and stuff like that. Well, okay, this is what we're seeing here, is those posing as messengers of light coming to say that they are the Messiah, or following the Messiah, who is Satan, and people will believe it if they don't know better. And this is the great sadness, that people don't realize that we're not dealing with aliens from other planets. We're dealing with beings that don't live here on Earth per se, but lived in a parallel universe right next to us, as the scriptures say, and have gated through, and are still gating through, and more will come as we get closer to the moment that he announces his presence. We're going to see something like that V event. We're going to see big craft and superpowers, and he's going to give his technology to the world leader, whoever's in charge at the time.
We now go to Dave, driving in Mississippi. David, you're up with us. Go ahead.
Hi, Stan and George. How are you guys doing?
Good, David.
Good day.
Hey, I have a question about some of I've been learning some of the Talmudic things in rabbinic Judaism, and it's fantastic the level of knowledge they have about the Garden of Eden. They consider part of the Torah, and it's fascinating. Did anything in there? Did you study any Talmudic writings that may have helped you out?
David, I have not read the entire Talmud. It's a long collection, but I didn't use any of the Talmudic references in what I found, because I started from a geological point and backed into the Genesis account. And so I only used basically the Genesis account and the Book of Jubilees, which is not as part of established canon in the Old Testament, but it still had valuable information that did agree with what I found in Genesis.
Okay, let's take one or two more calls here, Stan. That's all we're going to have time for. And, of course, we've got many links of Stan's website and the pictures he has supplied at coasttocoastam.com that take you to his website, standale.com. Next up, we go to Verdon, New Mexico. West, Bob's with us. Bob, you're on with Stan Dale. Go ahead.
Hi, George and Bob. Stan, this is Bob, the retired Border Patrolman. Stan, we talked on the phone one time. You probably remember me.
I do, Bob. I do. Thank you for your service.
Well, I want to preface this by saying you Steve Quayle are two of the giant intellectuals in this world right now, I'll tell you. And your study on the Garden of Eden is fascinating. And I have one question. We all, the different races, share a common blood, which makes me believe that we all could be traced back to the Garden of Eden. In the ancient Hebrew, have you found anything that explained anything about why we are divided into basically five different races?
Well, other than the allotment of lands by Noah to Ham, Shem, and Japheth, I don't. I thought about that, and I looked at where the lands were handed out, and the darker races got Africa, got Australia, the kind of mid range, brownish to white skinnish, were along Europe all the way through Iran down into Indonesia, through India and Indonesia. And then the yellow to white to yellow races were for China and to northern Russia. And they spread around that way. Now, it might have been, this is not evolution I'm talking about, it might have been a selective process where the people occupying those regions, their skin color, their melatonin changed with exposure to the sun and the elements to let them weather those places better. I don't know, but that's, if we have a mitochondrial Eve that they can trace all of us back to one woman in Northeast Africa, our gene pool has to have come from the same place and had to have maybe done adaptive mutation to the environment to get the colors.
Super. Stan, great job. Always a pleasure talking to you. Give Holly our best, okay?
You bet. Nice talking to you, George. We'll do it again.
Stan Dale, his website, standale.com. Up next, Michael Horn joins us with the prophecies of Edward Albert Meyer, Billy Meyer, on Coast to Coast AM.